From Dog Works Training Centers, professional canine training centers in Denver, Colorado, and Anchorage, Alaska, this is Dog Works Radio, committed to families and their dogs to build lifelong and fulfilling relationships. Visit our website at dogworksradio.com. Dog Works Radio is part of Twine Group Media and syndicated worldwide on blogtalkradio.com. Now, here are your hosts, Robert and Michelle Forteau.
Yeah, well, welcome, everybody. It is Sunday, November 13th, 2011. We're hosting from Willow, Alaska, the mushing capital of the world. We have about a foot and a half of snow outside, and we're in the full scale of winter here in Alaska. What's going on, Michelle?
Well, from what I understand, there's a little bit more snow than you guys are used to all at once.
We are. Last year, we weren't even on the sleds until the week after Thanksgiving, so we're lucky to have a nice little storm roll in this early in the season.
That's right, and you know, it's beautiful powder out there, and I haven't been able to get my chance to get on the sleds yet, but I will, I'm sure. So today, we have an interesting guest on. Can you tell us a little bit about our guest today, Robert?
We have a good friend of ours. Her name is Janet Roper. She's an animal communicator, and I look forward to speaking with her in just a couple of minutes. But before we do, let's talk a little bit about what's going on up here with our dogs in training. We have a brand new little board and train, a little Pomeranian named Sophie, as well as Nico, the protection dog, and Bonnie, another service dog. Give us just a real quick update, Michelle.
Well, I'm really proud of you remembered everybody's name, which can be difficult at times when we have over 60 dogs that we take care of. Nico, as everybody knows, has been with me since the day I got here. He traveled with me on the airplane, and he's doing great. He has tripled in size. He is doing what he's supposed to do, following us around, making sure that we're all safe and sound. He already at 6 months of, just barely 6 months of age, is alerting to noises that he hears outside as well as around the property when he's outside with us. Bonnie is with us on an extended service dog training program. She is a Scottish Terrier, and right now she's more Terrier than Scottish, let's just put it that way. She's doing well with her commands, but she is a little bit rambunctious with the other dogs, so we have to help teach her how to be better behaved when she sees other dogs. Sophia just got here a couple of days ago, a little Pomeranian who needs to learn some manners, and, you know, it's difficult to say. She's working well with me, but she sure is a handful for you and our son, Tyler.
You know, I'm just not good with the little teeny dogs, and I will be the first to tell you my clients that I remember walking into our brand new client's home and saying, you know, we do very well with our board and trains, but my trainer and wife and business partner, Michelle, she is the one with these little guys.
I guess so, but that kind of just locks me into no epic fail. I've got to succeed no matter what.
You know, let's talk a little bit about our sledding trip yesterday. Yesterday was our first day on the sleds up here in Alaska, and just like with any time, when you go out and buy a new used car, something always happens. And I was about 5 miles into the 15 or 20 mile run yesterday, and pretty much that new used sled pretty much crumbled at my feet. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yes, your new used sled, that was quite the investment, because let's just put it this way, the used price was dang near the new price, and I'm a little bit frustrated with that fact, because I don't necessarily think it's a design flaw, because so many mushers use this type of a sled up here. I just think that it was not well taken care of, not well preserved. It is only a 4 or 5 year old sled, hasn't been used that much, and I just think that in this situation, you're using very powerful dogs, and you know, you're not the small guy. You're definitely not built like Lance Mackey. You're built more like John Baker, and I think that a little bit too much pressure from you and the dogs on that one side shattered the plastic.
Well, we only had 7 dogs yesterday, so it wasn't too powerful. I was coming down a really pretty steep incline, making a hard left turn, and put on the brake, and it broke the crossbar pretty much in half. But we did manage to pull back into the yard about 15, 20 miles later in our convoy of 3 sleds and a snow machine. We made it all home safe, and just another story to tell to the people that are interested in mushing.
Absolutely. You know, it doesn't always go the way you think it's going to, even on a little training run. And as everybody says, the training runs are always much harder than the races. So once you get through all the training runs and all the mishaps and things that can go right or wrong, you prepare yourself for the race, and the race should be a breeze.
Well, I will be signing up for 2 races at least here this year. It's going to be the Kinnick 200, which is the 7th of January, and probably either the Don Bowers Memorial Race, which is the last weekend of January, or the Tustamina 200, which is the same weekend. For some reason, they put a lot of races at the same weekend at the end of January. So I'm looking forward to doing at least a 200 and a 300 or 2 200 milers.
Absolutely. And if you qualify, you're still slated to be running the Iditarod in 2013. And as always, I'm going to do the shameless little plug. We are always looking for sponsorships. It doesn't matter what you guys think you can help us out with, whether it be 100 dog booties or 1 dog booty, anything helps. And, you know, now is the time to help us out and get on board for sponsorships. You can reach us at
Train at Alaska Dog Works, or right through our radio show at Dog Works Radio. To search for us at any social media, we'll pull right up Dog Works Radio.
Absolutely.
So let's introduce our guest. She's calling in from Minneapolis, Minnesota, my old stomping grounds. I lived in Duluth for quite a while. She and I met just about every other guest we've had on our show through social media. We're pretty active on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and all the other types of social media out there. She is probably much more active than I, but without further ado, let's introduce our guest, Miss Janet Roper. She owns a company called Talk to the Animals. Her website is talk2theanimals.com. Janet, how are you this morning?
I am well. Thank you, Robert and Michelle. How are both of you doing?
We're doing well, thank you.
Absolutely well. You know, I just got up here from Colorado not too long ago, and I'm loving it.
I have to admit, when you were talking about that snow, you were making me cold, because here in Minneapolis, we're getting prepared for it, but we don't have it quite yet.
You know, it actually isn't that cold today. I mean, being from Colorado, I lived in Denver for 15 years, and I can complain about the cold, but I think it's sacrilegious to complain too much about Denver snow, since there is 355 days of sunshine there. But it feels like a Colorado day. It's about 22 degrees, and the snow is on the ground, and you want to go out, and you want to build a snowman, and you want to sled with your kids, and you want to play with the dogs. It's not too wet, and it's not too cold.
And those are the days that just make it worthwhile when it's perfect like that, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So, Janet, I know that you have a blog talk radio show, too. I've listened to it a few times, and your subject matter intrigues me. I've used an animal communicator in the past when our beloved Siberian Husky Aneke passed away. So I'm not going to butcher this at all. I want you to introduce yourself. Tell our listeners what exactly you do and how it can help our fellow pet owners.
Absolutely. One of the things that I love about animal communication is that here at Talk to the Animals, we totally believe that everybody can talk to the animals. Just because I am in connection with the animals and I'm hearing what they're saying, I get the information in words, in pictures, in feelings. That does not make me special. That does not make me gifted. That does not make me talented. That simply means that I am connecting into that channel to the animals and listening to what they have to say. And everyone has the ability to connect into that channel to hear what the animals have to say if they so desire to do that. So with animal communication, it really helps from my perspective of balancing the relationship between the animals, see what's going on from your animal companion's point of view, and then helping to adjust whether it's a discipline problem or if it's a living, you know, situation together, that kind of thing, helping to balance that so it's a win-win for all creatures, regardless of the number of legs that they have. So that is one of the benefits of animal communication. Yesterday I had a really interesting experience, and I do this all the time with animals. I had a mouse in the house, and my cat and my dog were after it, and so I had to corral them away. And I got the mouse in the bathroom by himself. I went and got a little plastic container, and I asked him to walk into the container. He did. I was able to lift the container, take the little mouse outside, and save him from, you know, my cat thinking, oh, boy, this is the greatest toy I've ever had to play with. So animal communication is very practical in that way also, of asking whether it's mice or ants or whatever for help in your life.
So you talk about on your website and on your show about intuition, and you said just a couple of minutes ago that everybody has that. And it's not just, you know, intuition isn't just, you know, some kind of taboo type subject matter. All of us have that. We just have to be able to harness that. How do you go about bringing that all to the forefront and making sure that it, you know, it's right there, you know, you were able to capture that, I guess is my question.
Okay. Yep, I hear what you're saying, Robert. The way I look at it, intuition is just the sixth sense. Now, not in the woo-woo sense like you might see it on TV or as Hollywood might represent it, but it is simply another sense with which to take in information. So when I am working with a domesticated animal that is living with a human, what I ask from the human is to give me the animal's name, age, breed, species. If they have any background information that is helpful, it's not necessary. If they have a picture to share, it's not necessary, but frankly, I love looking at pictures of animals, so it's a fun thing. That information acts for me like an email address. So I will take that information, I will intuitively connect with the animal and see what they have to say. Now, the way it is verified is when I start telling the human what the information is that I'm getting. And most of the time, I'd say 98% of the time, it's like, yeah, that's my animal. How did you know that kind of thing? But just like with emails, every once in a while, the email will bounce back to you. Sometimes that happens in animal communication, too. And when that happens, I just know that I need to reconnect, resend that email, so to speak, so that I am connected with the correct animal.
So I know that a lot of people are very interested in this type of thing, and there's all kinds of you guys, animal communicators, and that sort of thing. What are the types of people that contact you? I know that you've done grief consultations as well as behavior and that sort of thing, but if somebody's just looking for that extra edge, you know, they want to know something about their cat, their dog, their horse, whichever, why would they want to reach out to somebody like you versus, you know, going the more traditional routes?
A lot of times what happens, Robert, and that's an excellent question, is because I work in the field of animal communication and it is still considered woo-woo, I am the last call that people will make. They've already been to the vet, they've already worked with a trainer, and nothing is, or it's not helping the way that they want it to help, okay? So they're at their wits' end, and I would say, maybe 60 to 75% of the cases I get, it's like, you have to help this animal or we're taking this animal to the shelter kind of thing.
Right.
Now, it does not need to get to that state of being by a long shot, okay? So people are calling me as a last-ditch effort. I am getting the information again from the human, connecting with the animal, and then I'm telling the human what the animal needs, how the animal needs help in rectifying that situation, whatever that situation is. Now, what I find absolutely fascinating is a lot of times after that human who's at the, you know, wit's end, what do? They've made the call to talk to the quote-unquote woo-woo animal communicator. As soon as that call is made, the animal realizes already that the human is reaching out to them in a way that that animal understands instinctively. And just because they've called and they've already set up a schedule or a session with me, the behavior starts to change for the better. The animal realizes this is happening. They start to turn around and go, yes, I know you're trying to help me. I'm going to try and meet you halfway in the middle here.
You know, Janet, we're often one of the products of the last resort as well. You know, they've used all of the trainers, they've gone to the veterinarians, they've read all the books and things, and we're often that last call as well. So we know exactly what you're saying with that, and we're, you know, we're understanding at that point, wow, if we don't do something, the inevitable is going to happen, whether it be going to the vet for the, you know, for the inevitable shot, or, you know, getting rid of the dog, in our case being dog trainers. So yeah, we totally understand that, and that necessary goal that we must fulfill. Michelle, you have a question for Janet?
Well, yes and no. I mean, like Robert is saying, people for some reason do call us last, even though our website comes up first in the Colorado area and things like that. They call us last because they think that we're out of range for what they can afford. And, you know, it's odd to me that people will say that to us. Well, I didn't think I could afford you. Well, why would you say something like that when the best interest of the pet could be us, could be someone like you, or it could be a combination of Robert and I, as Robert's a behaviorist, and I don't know, I guess I'm a top-notch trainer, according to him, but it could be a combination of utilizing Robert, Janet, and their veterinarian to find what's best for the dog, especially when it's regarding shelter dogs. I find that people want to do that good thing because they just saw a Humane Society commercial that tore their heart out. So they need to go fill this void in their lives and themselves for whatever reason, be it guilt, be it, you know, I need to make sure that I do something good for something else. And when they get the animal, then they don't know what to do from there. Do you find that that's part of what callers talk to you about? Is, okay, I've got this animal, but now I'm not sure what to do.
Yeah, and I think, Michelle, that a lot of that is because we live in a DIY, a do-it-yourself society. So people think that they need to do everything themselves. They need to do this, they need to do that. And I also think that sometimes the people think if they reach out for help with their animal, unconsciously they may be thinking that I haven't tried hard enough. If I only try one more thing, maybe this will help. And, you know, folks, it's really okay to reach out for help. It really is.
Absolutely agree. And not only that, but I think they beat themselves up because as humans, we overhumanize what our animals are trying to communicate to us. And then when we misread it, we beat ourselves up for it and say, well, I didn't love my animal enough, he ran away.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and things like that. Like our guest last week, my friend and client, Kara Romansky, she finds people's pets for them. And we failed to ask her if she uses a communicator to help in the location of pets. But I think that all of our, you know, resources together in the pet industry, if we would pool together and work together, I think that we would find that, you know, what we are all trying to accomplish for these animals, whether it be dogs, cats, goldfish, tarantulas, whatever your pet is, will all come together and we'll finally get that understanding that the pets that we do embrace are supposed to teach us something about ourselves.
Right, right. I think that my clients, when they first work with me, they are really surprised that usually the first words out of my mouth are, have you taken your animal in for a vet check? When was the last time you had a vet check? I think they're really surprised about that because they think they're calling the animal communicator. Why would I be talking to them about a vet? Well, it's really important to make sure that that animal is in a good state of health, because if the animal is not in a good state of health, first of all, I am not a medical intuitive nor a vet, okay? So I can talk to the animal. I may not be getting anything from that animal that is helpful at that time to with that situation. It needs to be taken care of by a vet or by a trainer, perhaps first. Then come around to the animal communication, and then we can fine-tune and we can really work with that animal. I find that when the animal is in a good state medically and physically and all of that, that that's when animal communication really shines.
Do you find that a lot of your clients, and this is a hard subject because we've had a lot of people come on and talk to us about their experience with an animal communicator. An author out of Denver wrote a book called Beezer and Boomer. And his experience with the animal communicator, he was an attorney. He was very skeptical. But his experience ended up being very enriching in his life. He learned that his dog was very sick. He learned through the use of his vet that they wanted to do some drastic measures to save his dog's dealings with cancer. And the animal communicator explained to him that his dog did not want that help, that his dog needed to cross over and he needed to move on without him. So do you find that, a lot of times people don't just call you for help me fix my dog, but how do I let my dog go when they're not doing well any longer? When is it time?
Absolutely. And that is a very valid way to connect with a communicator. The communicator will connect with the animal, see what's going on from that pet's point of view. Now, interestingly enough, just last week I was talking to a cat about that. And the cat's human was asking me, should I take the cat into the vet? The vet wants to do the surgery. What does my cat think about that? And the cat truly wanted to pass on their own. And more than that, the cat wanted to pass on with her sibling, her two-legged sibling, okay, and her human mother and her human father there. So she wanted her family with her. She was very specific what blanket she wanted to have there with her. At first she was saying she wanted to pass it home, but then that information transferred into she wanted her family around her at the vet's office.
We're talking to Janet Roper, the owner and founder of TalkToTheAnimals.com. It's talk, the number two, TheAnimals.com. She's also a Blog Talk Radio host, same name, Talk to the Animals. Janet, when is your show, does your show air? I know I get a lot of updates and things about when you're doing your notifications, but do you have a particular day or time that you air every week for your show?
I do, Robert. It's Tuesdays and Thursdays, 8 p.m. Central Time.
And what is the focus these days of your show? Are you having people call in so you can communicate with their animals? Is it more of an education-type forum? You know, what are people going to listen to when they tune into your program?
It's more of an education-type forum. What I use is I use that as an educational platform, so to speak, for animal communication. And then I also have guests come on and talk about how they work in their related field of animals. Now, my belief is that whenever the guest is on, I've already vetted them out, so to speak, and my belief is that they are using their intuition in working with the animals, whether they are aware of it or not, which is one of the fun things about having different guests on the show, you know, is seeing how they are working with the intuition in their own field. I do not do communications over the show for two reasons. First of all, it's literally a one-woman show, and so I'm the producer, I'm talking, I'm, you know, running the switchboard, I'm doing the social media all at the same time. But the other thing, too, is because I think animal communication still has a history or a background of being woo-woo. And I don't want to add to that by just having somebody call in and say, this is going on with my dog, what do you think? If I give an answer in 30 seconds, 45 seconds, whatever, that doesn't really give me time to connect with the animal, to really see what's going on with that animal and to really work with that person on balancing what that animal needs. And, in the long run, helping that person and that animal balance their relationship.
My next question, Janet, is something that raises a little skepticism when you talk about animal communication. How are these guys talking back to you? I'm sure a lot of people ask you that. How can my dog talk back in words or, you know, in English or whatever? What is that process there when you are asking a pet something or looking for some type of communication there and you're getting some feedback? You know, how is that possible, I guess?
Okay, very good question. First of all, I'm going to say that it's by vibrations, okay? So if you think of music, you've got high, you've got low vibrations, you've got many kinds of different vibrations going on. So the animals are connecting with me through vibrations. Now, I take those vibrations, and because the animals want to reach out to us humans, they really think it's time for us humans to get on the ball and start reaching out to them too, they will come through the door that is the easiest opened by me. Okay, for me, that is words. I get information from the animals first in words, because I'm an extrovert and I deal with words. Second of all, I get it in pictures. Third of all, I get it in feelings. And that's my dog, Max, and he's confirming everything here. So I get the information like that. Now, different people will get it differently. Some people get smells, which I never get. Some people will get tastes, which I don't think I've ever gotten a taste. But like I say, it comes through those senses.
do people hear what they want to hear when they talk to you? I know in terms of like human psychic encounters and things, they'll often only hear what they want to hear about a particular communication with a loved one, whether it be a person or something else. Or are they truly getting back what they're intending to get, I guess is my question.
Exquisite question, very exquisite, and it depends on the person. Most people hear only what they are ready to hear. So I look at my job as a communicator is to tell that person what that animal wants them to know, hopefully in a way that that person will be able to understand it and will be able to take it in. Now, I do not believe that I do not believe it is my job to mince the words, to change the wording of what the animal has to say. But I also believe that I'm working both with an animal and with a human, and I need to be sympathetic to both ends of the spectrum, so to speak. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense. And, you know, a lot of people say to me in particular, wow, you have a particular way with dogs. And my response is always, I've lived in with a kennel of sled dogs for the last 20 years, so I have a little bit different perspective than the average dog trainer that went to a dog training school and, you know, is using clickers or treats or whatever. And I think a lot of that is on intuition as well as reading body language and communicating in other ways, more concrete or tactile ways versus that intuition. So I know exactly what you're saying about that connection that we have and how to harness that, so to speak, to bring that that bond a little bit better together. And I think it's a great way to kind of bring everything together, as Michelle mentioned, using a variety of resources, whether it be the trainer and the veterinarian and the communicator, as well as other people in the household, et cetera. Michelle, you have another question for Janet?
I do. Janet, Robert has experienced an animal communicator, but his experience was right along the lines of what you were just explaining to us, how you don't exactly get, I'm not feeling good from the dog, and you don't get, my heart hurts, or I have kidney failure. You don't get those types of conversational absolute words from the dog. And I know that for a fact because when our dog Aneke passed, Robert was gifted an animal communicator experience from a friend of ours, and she spoke with Aneke after his passing, and he let Robert know that he was okay and that he should move on and he should pursue what he's doing right now. That's part of the reason why we're here. But Aneke didn't say, go forward, my friend, and reach for your dreams. That's not what he said. Robert can share what he said if he chooses to. But I'm just wondering, when you try to reach out to a pet for a person, how often do you not make that connection?
I make it almost 100% of the time, okay? Now, having said that, let me qualify. There are also times when the animal doesn't want to talk to us, okay? And that makes sense because there's times when we don't want to talk to people, okay? We might be busy. We might have something else on our minds. We might be wanting to go outside and play or whatever, okay? So there's only been, off the top of my mind, Michelle, there's only been two times when I have not been able to communicate with an animal. And one of them was a corgi, and he was actually quite the character. And he didn't want to tell me what was going on because he said, I know you're going to rat me out to my human, and I don't want her to know what I'm doing during the day when she's gone. You know, and this was when I first started, and I was, like, really embarrassed because I'm going, oh, my gosh, she's paying me, and I'm not getting this information. I literally was getting nothing from this dog. And what was, looking back on it now, what was really funny, this was a face-to-face communication. And so both the dog and the woman were in front of me, and the dog got underneath the table, and he started nipping at my ankles. And then after he did that, he went to the door, and he looked from the door handle to his human, from the door handle to his human. And I'm just sweating bullets, you know. And so I finally told the lady, you know, I'm not getting anything from him. And she laughed, and she said, you know what, I really didn't expect it because he doesn't like to talk to people who are going to be telling me things about him. He usually tells me himself in his own time and in his own way. And it was just hysterical the way that he was doing that. The
you
other
know,
time,
it sounds just like a corgi.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that the truth?
So Janet, looking at your website, talktotheanimals.com, you have several services that you offer. You offer private consultation as well as grief consultation, behavior problems, that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
What are people calling you for the most? What is the most sought after service with you, Janet?
Frankly, Robert, it depends on the week.
Okay.
And I say that kind of facetiously because it seems like one week I'm dealing with litter box problems. The next week, everybody that calls in, they have an animal companion that is ready to pass over, okay? The next week, it might be lost animal. So for me, it goes in groups like that.
Right.
Yeah, we get cluster calls. That's what I call them.
No, seriously,
I will have an influx of only calls for like 10 days that only want to deal with come and teach my dog how to pee outside.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I'll get an influx of people that, you know, just take my dog and do your magic. You know, you get calls like that. And I just think it comes in waves. But, Janet, I do have another question for you. When did you decide that this was right up your alley and something that you were into and that you should be doing for people? I mean, there's a lot of skeptics out there, and they don't necessarily believe in intuition, let alone people that have these quote-unquote woo-woo powers.
Uh-huh.
But when did you discover that you could do this, or were you trained to do this?
My background is in music. I'm a musician, and I'm also an educator. So I have a background in performance and music and in teaching music also, okay? And so the way I got into animal communication was that I was teaching music at the time, and I had two dogs, and one of my dogs had passed on, and I needed another dog. So I went to the Humane Society. I picked up this glorious little dog. As soon as I saw him, I knew that he was the one for me. And this was before I was really consciously using my intuition. But I knew that this guy and I, that he needed to come home with me. He was the dog for me. So I asked all the proper questions, you know, and one of the questions I asked was, does he keep his kennel clean? You know, does he have any house problem issues in his kennel? And the answer was, no, keeps his kennel perfectly clean. Well, I got him home, keeps the kennel perfectly clean, and the rest of the house is free game to pee and poop on, okay? So I took him, seriously, because you can't make this stuff up, Michelle. So I took him to the vet. Yeah. And he was 8 years old when I adopted him, and they said he's really healthy for a boy his age. So then I worked with a trainer, and it just wasn't getting the results that I thought it should, quote unquote, be getting. And I was one of those, you know, last-ditch effort, what the heck do I do? Now, keep in mind, I've also got three cats. So I was living in a household, three cats, two dogs, okay? So literally, I'm sitting in front of the fireplace one day getting ready to light the fire, and this ad falls into my lap, Animal Communicator. And I'm going, what the heck? I've tried everything else. And she was in the area, called her, got some sessions going with Teddy. That was the dog that I had adopted. And what we found out during these sessions was that he had never been trained properly as far as his housebreaking skills, okay? When to go outside, how to ask to go outside, where to go outside, that kind of stuff. The people that had him, he was a very cute dog and very much like a prize you might win at the fair or something, like a stuffed animal. And they kind of had him as a token dog, you know. They had the perfect house, they had the perfect life, and then they had the perfect looking dog too. But because they weren't used to working with dogs, they didn't know how to work with Teddy, it confused him. And he just didn't know, I don't know where to go, I don't know how to go. Sometimes it's okay to go on the paper, other times it's not okay to go on the paper. And he really had some issues because of that. So in working with the communicator, I had my homework to do because animal communication, like I say, is not magic, okay? I had to get the house clean from all the places that he had peed and pooped. I had to move the litter box. I had to work on retraining him, and she helped me with that. And it was a process, okay? It was not overnight magic. So within 6 to 9 months of working with her and Teddy, the house was literally so clean, so to speak, that I could go and I could get new furniture, new carpeting, and Teddy helped me keep the house clean forever after.
That's a remarkable story, and that's just another reason why a person needs to use all of their resources. And speaking of resources, Janet, we see this often in our business, trends in different things, whether, you know, it be the anesthesia-free dental cleaning or, you know, the touch-free training, that sort of thing. Have you found in your business in animal communication that it's more of a trend-based thing, or is it something that always people are looking for?
I think that people are becoming more open to it, and I think that's because we can see role models on TV. There are radio shows about animal communication. Robert, in the past, I've gone to networking events, okay, to promote my business, and I introduce myself. I'm Janet Roper. My business is Talk to the Animals. I am an animal communicator, and I've literally been able to clear out a room. People will say, oh, that's really crazy. I'm going to go talk to that person over there. But I think that people are becoming more open to it when they hear about the success of it, when they hear about, and it could be word of mouth, however they hear about this, how animal communication really is a valuable tool in helping the relationship with the animals, whether that is working through a discipline problem or whether it's a training problem or a medical issue or a transition issue. Animal communication really is a valuable tool.
Right, right. Well, let's speak a little bit about that transition. I know that you probably get quite a few calls about that, and you and I share a good friend relationship with a Minnesotan named Sid Corpy. She's right down the road from you.
Yeah.
And she wrote a book called Good Grief, Finding Peace After Pet Loss, and she is a frequent guest on our show, and we host the Petlitzer Prize, which is coming up next Sunday on our show. It's a writing contest for writers, and she will be on then. But she was the one that kind of helped me over that difficult time when our buddy passed. And, you know, I've had a lot of dogs pass in my day, but for some reason this one was the tough one.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the first person I called when he passed. I remember I went up and, you know, I was crying my eyes out, and I drove up into the mountains of Colorado on the day that he passed away. And on the way back down the mountain, I called Sid, and we talked for a little while heading back into Denver there. And she really helped me out. And I think it's that type of connection that you try to build with your clients as well. So let's talk a little bit about that, Janet, about that transition period. Because, you know, pets are our family, and it's a tough thing when they go. And I remember one thing that Sid had told me. She said, some people just don't understand. They think it's crazy for you to dwell on this and to grieve about it and, you know, worry about this. He's just a dog. He just passed away. You know, go out to the store and buy another one. But it's not like that, is it?
It's not. No, it's not. Each person grieves differently, and we each have our own timeline. And as Sid puts it so well, most, you know, in our society, it's just a dog. Get over it. You know, if your dog passed away, you took it to the vet, come into work this afternoon.
Right.
Most people, as a matter of fact, all of the people that I know with animals don't operate like that. And it really hurts the people with the animals to get that kind of reception. Okay. Now, I'm not saying that the people who are telling us that information are doing it on purpose. They're truly trying to help in the way that they know how. Okay. But as people who are connected with animals, we need that little extra, if you want to call it warmth or understanding that, yes, this is truly a family member that has passed on. As a matter of fact, my dog Teddy, okay, he's the one that got me into animal communication. He kept the house clean. I had him until he was 17, and on the day that he passed away, his poor little body just gave out, and there was all this diarrhea and blood and everything. And he looked at me, and he said, I'm sorry, I couldn't keep the house clean, and that just tore my heart out. So I took Teddy into the vet, and I had to put him down right then. The very difficult thing was that from Teddy, I was getting that he didn't want to pass on. He wanted to stay here on the physical plane where his family was, his two-legged family, his four-legged. And, you know, Teddy was the kind, he just loved everybody that he met, and everybody loved him. And he didn't want to cross over because he didn't know what was going to be going on the other side. And he knew what was going on over here. I was in the position where I knew his oversoul, or his guardian spirit, if you want to call it that, connected with me and said, no, it is time for Teddy to pass on. You need to make this decision. That is the toughest thing I've ever had to do, Robert. I was crying, and it was like, buddy, I got to pass you, you know, help you pass over here. Now, he was only 32 pounds, and they ended up giving him not one, but two of those pre-shots, okay? And it was really difficult for him to let go. Once he let go and he passed on, he came back, he visited, he still visits with me, and he said, I'm so glad that you helped me pass over. Everything was fine. I just needed that extra help passing over.
And you know, this, Janet,
yeah, go ahead.
I'm glad that you described your experience with Teddy, because it is difficult to be the one that has to make that decision. And you never know if it's a right decision or if it's the right time. Is this the best thing for the pet? Robert couldn't do it. I had to do it. And to this day, I don't know if that was the right decision or the best decision for Neke at that time. But I believe that I had to do what I had to do because I could not allow him to suffer any longer. He was in extraordinary pain. He suffered from dementia, had had strokes, had some cancers on his skin and things like that. And I knew he was in a lot of pain because he would seek me out when he would get lost in the hallway and stand there for hours because nobody was home. And I just couldn't do it anymore.
Right.
And it's a hard thing to do, but I don't say that I have an intuition or a better way with animals than Robert does, like he says that I do with the little animals. I just stop and try to pay attention to how it is that they're responding to their surroundings, their environment, their situation. Is that a little bit about what you're doing?
Yes, you know, I'm looking at the quality of life, helping that person discern, but I'm also connecting into the animal, okay, and seeing what the animal wants. Now, a lot of times the animals, their experience with death and with transitioning over is very different from a human's, okay, in the sense that they don't look at it as the end. Okay, they know that it's just like changing clothes. It truly is just transitioning to another shape, another form, if you want to call it that, okay? So they don't have the fear or the anxiety about it that most of the humans do. However, they do want to protect their humans, okay? So I've had some animals stick around until the human got used to the idea that it was time for the animal to pass on and to the so that the human could say, okay, I realize this, you know, Fluffy, that it's time for you to move on. I'm ready to accept that now.
We're talking to Janet Roper, the host of Talk to the Animals on Blog Talk Radio, as well as the owner of Talk to the Animals, the business that does communication with your pets. You mentioned at the beginning of the show about a little mouse in the house, and I know
yeah.
that we've talked primarily about cats and dogs on this show, but you also have been pretty successful with horses and that sort of thing. Have you found, Janet, that a certain segment of the population of pet owners or animal owners seek you out more, whether it's the cat owner, the dog owner, the horse owner, et cetera?
It's mostly domesticated. The cats and the dogs and the horses. I get very few calls for reptiles. Now, I do talk to animals in the wild, so I do talk to snakes, and I do talk to other birds, other animals in the wild.
Have you found that the owners of these animals, the pets, the dogs, the cats, the horses, are looking for different things? You know, how does a horse owner come about versus the dog owner? We talked about potty training and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
What are the horse folks, what are they looking for?
Well, you know, a lot of times the issue might start with, I can't get a saddle on my horse, okay? He's nipping at me and this is not like for him to do that kind of thing. And so then I'm connecting with the horse. Now, again, I'm not a vet or a medical intuitive, but one of the way I receive information is in feelings through my body. Okay, so the animal, the horse will project to me what he might be feeling when that saddle is coming on, and it's really a horrible feeling, you know, that your back is hurting and that it's almost like having a needle stuck in, and it's very intense, and, you know, I'd be snapping at somebody, too, if I was in that kind of pain, you know, having to wear a certain pair of shoes, so to speak. So equine people usually connect with me on that form. He's not acting well on the trail. What's going on? He's spooking at this. He's spooking at that.
Have you found that people that are doing some type of performance events, whether it be dog shows or horse shows or some type of sports and things, they're looking to you for that extra edge? Have you found that?
You know, I haven't worked with a lot of people in the performance world. Most of my people are the everyday people, you know, that they've got Fluffy who lives in the house with them. That would be really interesting to work with more people in the performance world, though. I'm sure open to that.
So many of them are looking for that edge. They just don't know what is what's required. And you know, Janet, I do a little bit of NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, which is very similar to that intuition that you talked about. And I've worked with several people that are looking to get over that hump in terms of performance with their dogs, whether it be shows or obedience trials or that sort of thing. And I'm finding that if they can figure out what's going on in their mind, that they can make that next step to whatever it is to reach that goal. And I think that communication with the animals is just another tool. We've talked about that the whole show, just having that extra tool in the tool belt, so to speak, to make sure that that communication is in the right path. And I want to make sure that we let our listeners know that this isn't all negative stuff that we're dealing with when we're talking to folks like Janet and communication. And there can be some very positive types of communication, can't there?
Oh, absolutely. I have people who connect on a regular basis with their animals just to see how they're doing, to see what life is like from their perspective, you know. And it's like, well, do you want to wear this sweater today or that sweater kind of today? You know, what does my animal need from me? What does my animal want from me at this time?
Right, right. And you mentioned that you go to several events, networking events, that sort of thing, and the perception over time has increased. I know you do a lot of events where you speak and, you know, you're involved in this and that. What is the primary focus of these? Is it education? Is it these communication sessions? What's going on at these events that you attend?
My primary focus is you too can talk to the animals. Now, as a teacher, you know, I'm up there, I'm educating people about animal communications. I'm really happy to do communications for people, and I'm happy to show them how to do their own communications, to give them that power, to empower the people that they too can connect with their own animals and see what's going on from the animal's point of view.
Right. And you mentioned earlier about you don't do it on your radio show, Talk to the Animals on Blog Talk.
Correct.
Because it's just something you can't do in 35, 40 seconds, whatever you had said. And I totally agree with that. How long does it take, you know, once you sit down with a client and you know, you're getting ready to go, is this something that takes seconds, minutes, or is this something that has to be built up over time?
You know, I believe it's something that needs to be built up over time. I like to have, if I'm doing individual communication with someone, especially if it's someone new, okay, I want to have the time to talk to them to make sure that I'm the communicator for this case, because I also believe that I'm not the communicator for every case. Every case is not the case for me. All communicators have their strengths. If I'm talking to someone, for instance, I don't consider lost animals my specialty. Now, I do work with some of them, okay, and I do have success in helping animals find their way home, but I don't consider it my specialty, and I don't take all lost animal cases. So if I'm talking to someone who has a lost animal case, and if I'm getting, because from the get-go, when I first connect with that person, my intuition is already on working, okay? I'm already picking up information. Is this somebody I can help? Is it better for me to pass this person on to somebody else? If so, who would be able to really help this person and this animal get back together again, kind of thing? So my intuition is always going. I like to have like an hour to do the communication. Now, I do some email communications, and I call them mini sessions, and they're about 15 minutes, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. That's for someone who wants to experience it for the first time, and they don't want to sign up for a regular communication time, or if somebody just who does communication, and they just want to check in and see what's going on.
So help me out here a little bit, Janet. What is the difference, if there is one, between animal communication and like a pet psychic? You know, you see the ads on the internet or in the phone book or whatever. What are the differences in the two, if there are?
Oh, Robert, you hit my hot button on that one. I I do not believe that I am a pet psychic. That is, to me, the word psychic, it separates people out, and it denotes that that person has a special gift that only that person can help you with. Now, I understand why people use that word, and I understand why people call themselves psychics, because as a society, we understand that. Me personally, I do not think it is the proper word to use because, again, it sets it apart and makes it special that only a gifted few people can do. Okay? So pet psychic, animal communicator, in my book, it's one and the same. Does that
make
sense?
So they don't have any other special gift than what you have. They're pretty much doing the same thing.
From my experience, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you know, you hear all the stories about, you know, the human psychics, how they help find lost children and solve murders and that sort of thing. Is it the same thing? Is it that intuition that we all have, except you're doing it with the dogs and the cats and the horses versus, you know, the lost kids or the murder victims?
I believe so, yeah. As a matter of fact, people will ask me if I work with humans, and my answer is my focus is with the animals. Okay, now, when I'm in a communication session with an animal, I will sometimes get information for the human or about the human, okay, through the animal's perspective. But the intuitive link that I have going on is between me and the animal. It is not between me and the person.
You know, I have one follow-up question that I'm going to let Michelle ask a couple, and then we'll close the show. But my question is, what happens if one of these guys says something that is just tough to get over to the person? Like, hey, you know what? I hate this guy. You know, what happens at that point where the animal just says something you don't necessarily feel comfortable telling the human client?
Good question. First of all, it's been my experience that animals say what they need to protect their human, okay? So I've connected with animals who, and their human is a psychic, or not a psychic, excuse me, is a skeptic. And it's been hard for me to get information from the animal because the animal's going, gee, I don't know if my person wants me to tell you that or not. And I'm telling the animal, well, you know, they're the ones who've asked me to talk to you. Okay? Again, I feel that it's not my job to not tell the person what the animal is saying, but to couch it in a way, if I can, so that the person can take the information in. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense to me. Yeah. And you know, because all of us have those things that we just don't want to let go of or tell the other person. And I think that if you are, quote-unquote, employed to do so, that you have to make those conscious decisions when you're going in. Hey, I'm going to do my best to communicate what is communicated to me, right?
Right, right. As a matter of fact, I was working with a Jack Russell, and I had set up, I think it was like 3 or 4 sessions with this person, okay? And it was really funny because on the first session, this Jack Russell was telling me things, and I didn't know if the woman was ready to hear it, okay? So I broached it the best I could. She did not hear what I was saying, and so came back for the second session, and the animal was just quite insistent. He said, you need to tell her this. So I did, and she goes, you know, I'm glad you didn't say that last week because this experience was so new to me and everything you said was so new that I wouldn't have heard it you if you had said that last week. And I found that really interesting that she put it like that.
Right, right. I agree. I totally agree. Michelle, you have a last question?
Well, do you find that a lot of times people seek you out and then they either aren't ready to hear what you have to say or they can't embrace it? You know, just like you were saying, not necessarily that it's so new that, well, you know, I just don't believe that whatsoever, but that they just can't embrace what their pet just said.
I hear what you're saying, Michelle. I think it's really interesting. I am so open about animal communication when I am out on social media that people who connect with me and who have connected with me through social media, they pretty much know how I work with the animals, so to speak. Now, I have had in the past some clients that could not embrace what was being said, okay? And I can only help them as much as they can hear what I'm saying. At some point, I feel it is my job. It's like, okay, I've told you this. I can help you if you're ready to hear it. But if you're not, you know, then we just need to move with where you are right now, where you are ready to hear things.
Exactly what I was looking for, but I'm going to twist it just a little bit here at the end, because I had an experience through a client of mine that had a service dog that was very dear to me, and they had a family member who had a girlfriend who was a pet communicator who communicated with the dog that I placed in their home and proceeded to tell me that they were going to reject the dog that I had already trained for 2 years for this specific person for her specific condition.
Okay.
And they're rejecting the dog because the girlfriend, animal communicator, decided to tell them that the dog did not want to live there. And push comes to shove, it was because the girl that I was placing the dog with was a young girl, under the age of 20, decided that she didn't get a heart connection with the dog. She had a psychiatric issue. She was dealing with agoraphobia, and the dog was not a small dog. This was a German Shepherd chosen for her by her family to help her feel protected when she would leave her home, so that she would leave her home. And I'm just wondering, do you ever run into that where you've had a client call you and say, well, friend of a family member said that this is what my dog wants to do? And this family rejected the dog, and the dog is now with someone else, and he's very happy. But I'm just wondering, how often are you finding in your field that people are taking advantage of this?
You know, that's a tough question, and I certainly hear what you're saying, Michelle. I believe in the law of attraction, that we attract, you know, what we need in our life, but we have to be open to receiving, you know, what we need in our life too. And it sounds as if they weren't open to receiving what, you know, you had worked so hard with that dog and helping that gal out.
Right, exactly. And it's not necessarily about me at that point. The point was is that the dog was ready to do the job, and he was
right.
Doing the job, and he was rejected, and I was concerned about him in particular. You know, oh my God, I can't do my job for this person, and that's all I've been trained to do since I was 8 weeks of age, is to do this type of a job for this person, and now I've been rejected. I mean, do you get calls like that where you find a dog that's been rescued, and they say, hey, I was trained, I was told to do this, and the people didn't like me, or I was beaten, and you know, here I am with a new person, and am I going to be okay with this person? Do you ever get those types of communications from the animals?
Not a lot, no. I will get communications. For instance, I was working with one of the Humane Societies here, and there was a blind dog, and the workers in the Humane Society were feeling really sorry for the dog and everything. You know, he couldn't see and this and that and the other. And the volunteers, everybody was feeling really sorry for the dog, so they asked me to talk to the dog. And I did, and he said, you know what, animals go much more with the flow than humans do. You don't need to feel sorry for me. Just because I can't see doesn't mean I'm not taking information in ways that you're not aware of, meaning the humans weren't aware of. So my experience has been in situations like that, the animals tend to go more with the flow and live more in the moment than what we humans do.
And I think that's what connection that we want to have. We want to have that flow, and if people can figure that out, we're going to have a much better bond with our animals. Janet, we're talking to Janet Roper, the owner of Talk to the Animals, as well as a host on Blog Talk Radio. In the last couple of minutes, Janet, since we do share time here on Blog Talk, what's coming up on a couple of future shows?
Oh, we've got some fun things coming up on a couple of shows. I'm doing, let's see, Tuesday show, Susan Stoltz, who is an author and who has written a book about the animals, is going to be on the show, and she's going to be talking about her new book that has come out. And let's see, I've got wildlife photographer coming up talking about how to take pictures of animals in the wild. There's always animal communication tips on Talk to the Animals show on Blog Talk Radio. And then Shannon Benneke, who is the Talk to the Animals wellness expert, holistic wellness expert, has weekly tips on holistic care for your animals. And also Darlene Arden, who is the pet expert, that's PetExpert on Twitter. She is the Talk to the Animals cat expert. And Darlene comes on the last Tuesday of the month and shares her information about cats.
Well, it looks like a full slate of shows there on Talk to the Animals on Blog Talk. I look forward to promoting your shows as much as we possibly can. Janet Roper, Talk to the Animals, was our guest today. Janet, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us on a Sunday morning.
You are quite welcome. Thank you so much. It was fun, and I look forward to having both of you on the show, too.
We look forward to it as well. We'll make sure to pass along any email or comments that we get to you so you can answer them as you can. So on behalf of our co-host, Michelle Forteau, and our guest today, Janet Roper, this is Robert Forteau. We will see you guys next weekend on Sunday. We're talking about the Pettlicer Prize Round 5, I believe it is. And on Thursday evening, it is the Gypsy Musher with Iditarod veteran and Yukon Quest veteran Hugh Neff, Thursday at 4 o'clock Alaska time. So until then, never forget your dreams. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.